one of the things that I haven't talked to you about is that Nimrod allegedly, or maybe I did, didn't I talk to you about Nimrod throwing Abraham into the furnace? No. Well, the same thing that happened to the three Israeli children in Daniel happened to Nimrod. And happened to Abraham.
Did they just toast people a lot?
Well, I don't know about how many times they did it, but they did. They, this is one of the midrash that they did it to Abraham. And the same fruit, the same thing had happened. He was cooled by another presence within the flame, and it scared Nimrod so badly that that's when he sent him out. But he sent him out with wealth. And the word Ur in the Hebrew for that place of Ur in Babylon is the same as the Hebrew word for fire. And so in verse 7 it says, he said unto him, I am the Lord that brought thee out of the fire of the Chaldees to give you this land to inherit it. It's one of innumerable. You realize like there are 100 different midrashim about Abraham's being in Babylon. I mean, different styles, different stories, and I just touched on a few of them when we studied them. So,
isn't there some place in reference to the furnace in Egypt?
Yeah, that's a few verses. Yeah. Okay. And he said, Lord God, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? Give me some proof. And he said unto him, take me a heifer of 3 years old, and a she-goat of 3 years old, and a ram of 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. Now, the first thing, it probably doesn't say of 3 years old. That's a King James screw-up. In each of those cases, what it really says is, bring me three bullocks, or three fruit of the heifer. Bring me three fruit of the goat, and three fruit of the ram, three rams. So there's a total of 9 different sacrifices that are here, of just those, and then there's 2 more, counting the 11. And he says, And a ram of 3 years old, and a turtle dove of 3 years old, and a turtle dove and a young pigeon. And he took them unto him all these, and divided them in the midst, and laid each piece one against another, but the birds divided he not. He showed him 3 kinds of bullocks. The first bullock was for the sacrifice in the Day of Atonement. The second bullock was for that which is an account of an unwitting sin. The third bullock was the heifer whose neck was broken for another sin in Deuteronomy, which we haven't gotten to yet. And some say another one of those three was that it was for the ashes of the red heifer. He showed him 3 kinds of goats, one for the goat that was sacrificed in festivals, one for the goats that was sacrificed on new moons, and one for the she-goat that was brought by individuals for the sin offering. And he showed him 3 kinds of rams, one for the guilt offering of certain types, the leper when he was cleansed, the Nazarite when he had completion, etc. One for the guilt offering of doubt, and another for the sin offering of an individual. What that means is he showed unto Abraham by these sacrifices, he showed unto him all of the meaning of the book of Leviticus. He showed unto him Jesus Christ cut up into little parts. And if you believe Paul in the gospel in Galatians, this is when he showed unto, this horror of great darkness is when he showed the gospel unto Abraham. He preached the gospel to Abraham right here in the divided carcasses. Now your Sunday go-to-meeting Christianity will not accept that, because to them the gospel is good news. How could it be a horror of great darkness? Well, you must be about to understand, you must be beginning to understand that the gospel isn't very good news. The gospel is great news to the Father, it's bad news to the human race. And if you haven't begun to suspect that by now, You must be a little dull of hearing. You understand me? The gospel is not good news to the human race. It's not good news to any of your dreams. It's not good news to any of your desires. It's not good news to any of your ambitions. It's not good news to any of your relationships. It's a horror of great darkness. Let that sink in. Hear it. Do you understand? It's not about making relationships happy. It's not about being successful in this world. It's not about having all your little problems solved. The gospel is about suffering. If you suffer with him, you will reign with him. The gospel, if you're not yet come to the end, is the worst news you will ever hear of your life. If you've come to the end when you're at the verge of suicide, then you can agree with God and say, yes, it's good news. And only then. When God showed the gospel unto Abraham, it was a horror of great darkness. It wasn't anything like the modern world is putting on to Christianity. Why in the world would anybody be foolish enough to follow this then? Because there's nothing else. Why would you be foolish enough to follow something that costs you your life 20, 30 times a day? If it doesn't cost you your life, then you know you're something is wrong. Don't you see the disservice that these idiots are doing to Christianity when they say that if you're a Christian that you shall smile a lot and be happy and everything will be there for you? Because that's not the way it happens. So they have to believe a lie. And they learn to fake it. They learn to be hypocrites even more than we do. Do you understand me? The gospel is the horror of great darkness that we're about to get into here. What?
Well, this is at least the second time I've heard you teach on this, and maybe the third. And I think I just know what you're doing.
He showed them all the sacrifices. What are the sacrifices for? They're the IOUs. And Jesus paid the check. But the sacrifices are the revelation of the intimacy, of the intimate detail of what Christ's life is like. It takes him apart down to the sinew and the marrow of the bone. Have to begin to suspect that we are a people of a different breed, of a different type, of a different flavor, of a different complexion than anyone else I know of. We're not about what you think is right. We're not about what you think is going to make you happy. We're not about bands. We're not about relationships. We're not about where you live. We are about being conformed into the image of Jesus Christ and only that. That's the only thing we give importance to. Everything else is a tributary on the great river that's pulling away water, our strength from that river. Now, another interpretation is that he said, take me a heifer. That's Babylon and the three kings. It's all these animals that represent the kingdoms that are going to destroy Israel, or try to, and they're going to destroy in type you. So you have to understand this. One, the first one is to take me a heifer, which means Babylon, and these three kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Merodach, and Belshazzar. Take me a she-goat, which is Media, and Persia Media, and it's Cyrus, Darius, and Ahasuerus. Take me a ram threefold. They say it's the two great kingdoms of Greece plus Rome. What is in history, as we look at history of the people that, you understand it, when it talks about Nebuchadnezzar or Merodach or Belshazzar, there are many, many other kings of Babylon. There are jillions of kings, but the Jewish people in this book are so arrogant that the only ones they put in here are the ones that had anything to do with them. You understand? But what is Babylon? What is the test of Babylon to you? It's man's innate desire to be religious. Cause and effect. The great aspect. Do you understand in Egypt they don't care anything about cause and effect? Babylon, cause and effect means you want justice if you really think about it. If you put this forth. In Egypt, you want to get it any way you can, right?
Yeah.
In Egypt, cause and effect are meaningless. This is sort of a thing that you think about. Maybe it's out there somewhere, but in Egypt, you just get it. Like, you know, can you any of you really believe that Ross Perot believes that he has earned $4 billion?
No.
These guys are like this guy, Michael Milliken, who made $500 million last year. Do you think really think he put enough effort forth to earn $500 million? In Egypt, nobody cares. In Egypt, there's just guys that make it and guys that they step on to make it. That's the only two things there are in Egypt. In Babylon, you begin to be concerned with civilized. You get right and wrong, you get civilized, you get religious, you get... Okay? Well, what in hell then is Persia? Media Persia. Spiritually, the thing that comes at you is your belief in magic. Media Persia is always magic and sorcery. Babylon is always cause and effect. And Egypt or the world is the survival of the fittest. Now, those are the three kingdoms that come against the seed. You got it? Now, we don't talk much about Media Persia because it's not written about much, but the idea of magic is what dominates most of your, or it did as the child anyway, it dominated you. You began to think about how you're going to get something and what magic spells you're going to cast to get it and how you're going to take a little eye of a newt here and a spittle of a cat there and you're going to mix it together, and you're going to get your desire, and you're going to hurt that person that embarrassed you. You're going to hurt them with your magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now
they'll see.
So now that explains why God walked through all that.
That's right. God walked through the midst of each one of those, signifying both the covenant and the fact that by His walking on the blood, He had overcome it all. This is Christ. You understand? A little bit? Now the bird He divided not. Well, the birds divided He not. Now there's a lot of things about birds here. Yeah. There's another interpretation. The heifer referred to the bull god El, or to the Canaanite moon goddess. The she-goat to the Philistine goddess, the mother of the Cretan Zeus, whom the Greeks knew as Amalthea, and the ram to the Sumerian sky god, or to the ram-headed Amon of Egypt. Now he divided not the birds. The Israel's emblem is a pigeon. This was the non-migratory pigeon which frequented rocks and caves, whereas the migratory turtle dove represented the nomadic Ishmaelites and their kinsmen, the Edomites. But he divided not the birds. Why?
Were they dead?
Hmm? Well, let me show you. And when the fowls came down upon the carcasses, Abram drove them away. You remember the stories when we were studying exorcism, or was that in here? In the Apocalypse of Abraham, Azazel plays an important role as his antagonist. And the story of the divided sacrifices, the fowls that came down upon the carcasses were really Azazel and his legion in the form of vultures. Azazel as being the chief demon. The vulture tells Abraham to flee the holy heights and to leave the angel. Abraham refuses to listen to Azazel. Then the furnace appears and the angels carry up the sacrificial victims, while the wings of the undivided dove carry Abraham to heights above heaven.
So that's the spirit.
But I'm reading this book. It's the wildest book I've ever read in my life. It's called The Egyptian Book of the Dead. Have any of you read it?
I've read parts of it.
It was written over a 3,000-year period, and it was the little parchments of funeral verse that were put into the tomb of the kings when they were buried. So the Egyptian Book of the Dead and the later tombs were the ones that a lot of them had all of these that they had chronicled. And so what they call the Egyptian Book of the Dead, really the better translation or the better title of it should be The Awakening of Osiris. Yeah. And Osiris is the, how can I say it? It's the hope of Christ in the Egyptian religion. Osiris is the, whenever you see the man on the hieroglyphics with a bird head, that's Osiris. And every time there's a bird head in ancient Egyptian religion, it means resurrection. And so, again, that fruit or that type of the ancient truth, there's only one truth. And there's remnants of it in all the ancient religions. Okay? But I like the idea that the wings of the undivided dove carry Abraham to heaven.
And that's when he saw the stars on the other side?
Mm-hmm. Now, Azazel, a fallen angel who seduces mankind, came disguised as a vulture to feast on the carcasses. He addressed Abram, saying, "What are you doing here on these holy heights where no mortal may eat or drink? Fly off, lest the heavenly powers burn you." But Abram's guardian angel rebuked Azazel. "His lot lies in the heights, as your lot lies in the depths. Depart, for you can never lead him astray." Okay? Now, another reason, this is just this strange little sentence about why, and it's this rabbi's interpretation of why the birds weren't divided in the Midrash. It says, "He who attempts to resist the wave is swept away by it. but he who bends before it is not swept away. That's all it says. A little sentence in the midst of it.
The bird just rides.
And when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and lo, a horror of great darkness fell upon him. And he said unto Abram, now, I'm going to show you something.
When you said earlier, you said, I realized what's happened in me about the last 10 minutes since you said that the gospel was the horror, is the horror of great darkness. That's probably the most comforting thing I've ever heard.
Just because you're weird.
Well, it's because it has seemed like so much has been wrong, so wrong for so long. And that simple sentence clears that up. It means that, that nothing is wrong, that it's the way it's supposed to be. It means I'm not going to end up in heaven.
You sure? Where it says deep sleep, it's the Hebrew word tardemah, T-A-R-D-E-M-A-H, and it doesn't mean sleep like we think it, it's a trance. This was done so as to isolate Abraham from all other perceptions, to remove entirely all the earthly senses, thereby to bring him into a totally yielded state. Every one of your senses only takes you away from yieldedness. You understand that? The scriptural injunction is, I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. The word present is parastemi in the Greek. It means to yield without condition. To yield without condition. What prevents you from yielding without condition is your sensory perception. Again, God, a rock yields really well. Have you ever thought about that? A rock is a great yielder. It does it. It yields to the power. But you, just like, you remember, God desires the only breads, there's only five grains that you can make matzah with. And those five grains, all of them have the common denominator that they are able to be leavened. If the matzah bread cannot be, if the grain for matzah cannot be leavened or doesn't have the propensity to be leavened, it can't be used. God could have made man in any way, in any form that he desired, but he had to have made man so that he could be tested in every arena that was important to God. So that the end result of being yielded, the end result of being presenting yourself as the living sacrifice, would come after you've tried everything else, either experientially or by empathy. Again, I've said unto you that Jesus Christ is what's left when everything else you can think of is gone. As long as you have the capacity to make a choice, a decision, then you're going to choose the wrong God. It's axiomatic, you will. Now, here, in order for him to see truth, to see through everything, he had to put him into this deep trance so that all his sensory perception was removed. Have you ever been into a trance, a hypnotic trance? God alone was perceived and heard. God had to show Abraham the ultimate darkness in truth, so that he would know that darkness and light are alike unto him. Go to Psalm 139. There's some rabbis who claim that Psalm 139 was written by Abraham after he experienced the horror of great darkness. O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou hast known my down sitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassed my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. For lo, there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before, and thou hast laid thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain to it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the light shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. And he goes the rest of it. But that's allegedly. Once you know the terror of God, you persuade men. It must happen to us also. We don't like to think about that. We don't like to think that this book says it's a fearful thing to fall into the living hand, to fall into the hands of the living God. That's not our image. That's not our thing. That's not what we want to know. That's not what we want to hear. Let's go back. Genesis. In verse 13. Well, the horror of great darkness.
But isn't that's what God wants you to see anyway, Laura? That's what God wants you to see anyway.
It's what?
To someone is all the darkness. Because you're not
going to
see the light unless you see the
light. That's right. In order to know this, you have to have reached a position where you are willing to turn off the other sounds. In order to be willing to turn off the sounds, you have to know that there's no life in those sounds. There's no answers there. Otherwise, you'll continue to listen to the different sounds for an answer to your misery. But finally, you come to a point where there are no sounds. Now, spiritually, Abraham had to have come to this point now before he could experience this horror of great darkness. He had to know that there were no other things to be conquered. There's no more wisdom to be found. That it wasn't to be found in intellect or wisdom or even in emotion. That it wasn't to be found in going somewhere else, that it wasn't to be found in some other scheme or place. He had to finally realize that this moment, this was all there is. That's a sobering thing. And it gets worse. And he said unto, one of the things that he said while this horror of great darkness was upon him, he said, "Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them for 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in a peace, and thou shalt be buried in a good old age. In the fourth generation they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. And it came to pass that when the sun went down, it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. Now, there is a smoking, we're going to talk about the Amorites in a minute, but...
So Abraham witnessed this, right? He witnessed the smoking lamp.
Yeah.
No,
he saw. The smoking furnace and the flaming torch represent four things. They represent Gehenna, the foreign kingdoms that would override Israel. It represents revelation, or the revelation of Messiah, and it represents the temple. As long as thy children occupy themselves with the latter, i.e. the revelation of Messiah and the temple, they will be saved from the former two, Gehenna and the foreign kingdoms. If they neglect the latter two, they will be punished by the former two. Now let's go to Deuteronomy 7. When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, and hath cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter shall not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. For they will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve after other gods. So will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you and destroy thee suddenly. But thus shall you deal with them. You shall destroy their altars, break down their images, cast down their groves, and burn their graven images with fire. For thou art a holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself above all the peoples that are on the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love upon you, nor choose you because you were more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand, and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore that the Lord thy God, he is God, the faithful God, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him, and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations, and repayeth them that hate him to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack to them that hateth him, he will repay him unto his face. Thou shalt therefore keep the commandments, and the statutes, and the judgments which I command thee this day to do them. Now, of all of the things that could hurt Israel, and could hurt the revelation of God, more than any other thing, that God warned and Paul warned and all the prophets warned to keep away from was the idols of these foreign nations. In you, that's the number one thing that will drive you away, that will pull you away from the concern with the revelation of Messiah and the temple. It's not Gehenna, our fear of Gehenna. It's the foreign nations in which you will be living. An adoption of their idols. Now, you don't know it, but you don't have any value systems. There's nothing there. There's no there. The only thing that you have are things that you have copied from the foreign nations that you have bought as yours. You understand me?
When you say you don't have any value systems, you're saying you never had any, you just went out and found some.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Okay, as opposed to we had some and gave them away.
You've never had any of your own. You've never had anything of your own that's intrinsically yours. Everything that you have, you've co-opted from another source. From these foreign, spiritually, from the foreigners. Does that really, do you understand that? You don't have an identity? You don't have a belief system? You don't have any values? Do you really believe that? Did you hear what I'm telling you?
I'm talking about that just being like swimming in lies. Yeah, in lies. So much a part of the way we think. It's not even apparent most of the time.
So let's get him in.
It's like even in painting. The first few paintings I painted unconsciously looked exactly like the work of Georgia O'Keeffe. I never set out to make paintings that look like hers, but I did like her work. And I remember when I first became aware of painting years and years ago when I was a kid, I liked her paintings then. So and there it was. It resurfaced somehow. I was like, oh. You know, I mean, even there, it's just, well, there's no creativity or originality there. Just stuff that's socketed up to the top.
But it's like, even the thing that makes you you, you've taken a little piece here and a little piece there, you've grabbed on a little, I mean, it's like you're a collage of...
That's why you get so upset when someone tries to...
When it exposes
you.
You
try to take it away from you.
Because you get desperate. Because you know that if there's nothing there, and somebody takes some of that away from you, and there's no there, that you'll just poof into air.
Didn't God have something to do with that too?
Of course he did.
So I don't understand the Gehenna.
Good Egyptian.
Gehenna means the Hinnom, or the Valley of Hinnom, which is the valley that's right outside of the temple in Jerusalem. That's Gehenna, means the Hinnom, or the, it's the dump. Hell is the dump of Jerusalem. Everything that goes in the dump once had value, and then it goes through the process of being used, and then it goes to the dump. So spiritually, hell is the dump. All that exists is the promise and the dump. Nothing else exists besides those two.
Or the dead place, or where dead things are.
What? Yeah. No.
What is a dead place?
Dead is quite a spin on the term. No, forget that.
Well, I'm just trying to couple, you know, the four things. I understand the foreign nations and the...
Oh, no.
But I don't understand the Gehenna.
Gehenna is the dump.
It's where you get thrown if you're useless.
It's where you get... Where you go if you're useless.
God. If you're dead, your body's useless. That's where it goes. You know, I mean, it's the same.
It had use once. But you'd, if
so
you,
the only correlation is if you go with the idols, then you end up in the dump.
No, that's useless. Why if you go the first two, then you can't go the last two.
Basically, you're either used to God or you're...
Verse 16, and the fourth generation that shall come here again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. Go to Matthew 30. Go to Matthew 23. What does that mean?
All sinning isn't done.
Okay, well, before you go to Matthew, go to Ezekiel 16. Again, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, cause Jerusalem to know her abominations, and say, Thus saith the Lord God unto Jerusalem, Thy birth and thy nativity is of the land of Canaan. Thy father was an Amorite, and thy mother a Hittite. Okay? To Jerusalem, thy mother was an Amorite.
She's got a stick in her craw.
Hmm?
That had a stick in her craw.
I didn't like that. That's one of the reasons they don't read anymore. That's why they made a three. They don't have a 3-year cycle. They have a 1-year cycle. They have a 1 year cycle, and they took out all of those kind of parts.
The 80 scriptures.
It's just like Christianity.
Yeah. Sort of just same as Islam.
It's just like the narrow teaching.
Took out all the
we read the very scripture.
We even talked about it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now go to Matthew.
Don't listen to Harry.
23. Matthew 23 is a pretty woeful chapter. Let's start in verse 23. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought you to have done, and not leave the other undone. You blind guides which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you make clean the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within they are full of extortion and excess. Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but within are full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so, you are also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within you are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchre of the righteous, and say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Wherefore you are witnesses unto yourselves that you are the children of them which killed the prophets. Fill ye up then the measure of your fathers. Okay, that's what the Amorite, the sin of the Amorite is not yet full. The Amorite is sort of an unknown population in the Bible or in history. There's groups of people every once in a while that were called Amorites, but fundamentally what it means is they are whoever was on the land that weren't supposed to be there. Okay, they were the Canaanites. There were the people that were on Judah. The Amorites were all of the seven tribes that were the usurpers of the land, seven nations mightier than thee. The sin of the Amorites, for Jesus to say that to them, they knew what he meant. Fill up the measure of your fathers. And then when Ezekiel called them, your mother was an Amorite, or your father was an Amorite, your mother was a Hittite, That blew them away. They knew. And Paul is saying, and assuming here, we're writing unto you that know the law, what are the sins of the Amorite? The sin of the Amorite is not yet full. Well, here they are. They're listed. I mean, this isn't a guess. But they're listed throughout different places in the scriptures. And I'm just going to read them. Homosexuality, incest, inordinate affection, adultery, idolatry, profanity, bestiality, witchcraft, whoredom, dishonoring parents, murder, stealing, and lying. Those are the sin, that's the sin of the Amorite.
What does it mean by inordinate affection?
It means liking the wrong thing. Having affection for that which is abominable. Now, in order for you to know that the sin of the Amorite is fulfilled, you have to know that that's your flesh. You understand that? And do you know that? There's 13 pretty nasty things here. Homosexuality. Incest, inordinate affection, adultery, idolatry, profanity, bestiality, witchcraft, whoredom, dishonoring parents, murdering, stealing, lying. The sin of the Amorite, in order for the sin of the Amorite to be full, what does that mean to you? See, when we talked before about that you're the chief of sinners, you have to know that you're the chief of sinners, that's too general. This gets more specific. Do all of you admit you're liars?
You name it.
Do all of you admit you're stealers?
Yep.
All of you admit you're murderers? All of you admit you dishonor parents? All of you admit you're whores? All of you admit you're involved in witchcraft? All of you admit you're involved in bestiality?
Seven is more seven.
No. Profanity? Sure. Idolatry? Adultery, inordinate affection, incest. Well, you understand that the sin of the Amorite is the idea. Paul has to, you have to come to with Paul that I am the chief of sinners. And all of the other things we talk about, then you have to be able to say, I abandon that. I abandon myself. I'm not concerned with myself. I know that I'm the chief. If you know that you're chief of sinners, you won't worry about yourself anymore. You just forget about it.
At which point the seed's no longer a prisoner.
Right. The seed's no longer a prisoner if you abandon yourself. It's the mystery. But as long as you try to take this stuff to you personally, then you haven't seen the sin of the Amorite yet. Capisce?
So then everyone has the seed, but unless they move all of this, you know, abandon themselves, and the seed can't grow.
Right.
Essentially.
Yeah, the seed of God, which is Christ, the sperma of God, is shed on all flesh.
Yeah.
It's within all men.
So then, I mean, that's...
The only way it's manifested as that if we pick up the cross or accept our death penalty.
That's where free will comes in.
There's no such thing as free will.
Okay.
You only have the will to do the will of Satan, which is, it's broad. I mean, it has the appearance of free will, but it's all serving self, the will of Satan or the will of God. The will of God is only manifested in the abandonment of self. There's only the will of God or the will of Satan. There's only two wills in the world. You're not in there.
Wouldn't your will be getting it wrong?
Hmm?
Wouldn't your will be just trying to get wrong?
That's the will of Satan. The salvation of the isolated self, the rightness of the isolated self. That's the will of Satan. You can say, what about the good people? When it benefits them to do good, they'll do good. When it benefits them to do bad, they'll do bad. As long as the kingdom of self is satisfied, Satan is happy. Amen? And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp passed through those pieces, passed between those pieces. And that was the furnace and the lamp that was the signifier of the presence of God as he walked through the pieces. Okay? And in that same day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land from the river of Egypt, unto the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenanites, the Kenizzites, the Kadamites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. Now notice there are ten people there, but there's only seven that we read about earlier, and there's only seven on the promise. The reason is, a lot of them there are a lot of duplicates that we'll get into when we get into what each of those mean. Okay? That's enough for tonight. Where is
what does it mean to restrain a gnat to swallow a camel?
Primarily means the sense of the metaphor is that, or the saying is the idiom, is that you concern yourself with what you think you can take care of when the weightier matters of the things you're guilty of. You make your world real little so that you can be a king in it. Well, each of these parasite things, let me just quickly go over and tell you what they mean. A Hittite means to prostrate yourself from below. Hivite means... Prostrate. A Hivite means came from Eve. The Amorite means something that's public. A Canaanite means to a merchant or one who's humiliated. A Perizzite means to separate. A Jebusite means to trample or loathe or the threshing place. But we'll see what those types mean later. The name of Jerusalem, the original name of Jerusalem was Jebusi. And David bought it from the guy. Okay? The thing I want you to remember tonight is the gospel isn't good news. It's great news to God, bad news to man. They'll kill you for that down at the First Baptist Church, by the way. So don't go saying it. Say it with wisdom. Anybody have anything else? Take a big guy.